happy to be here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We've been bringing you this show for years, I guess since PRN started. And of course, we have other shows as well. And we love the feedback we get from our listeners. We love to hear from you. You can always join us by visiting naturalnurse.com. And if you click on calendar, you'll see the many up-and-coming classes, both on ground when we meet you in person face-to-face, such as herb walks outside where we gather edible and medicinal plants all over the country, and online. We have a class in a couple days on herbs for the heart, how to take care of your heart naturally. And you can join us online for that class. If you can't make it at the time we give the class, all of our classes are archived, which means that you can take them at any time. That is just really, really fantastic. We're so happy to have that available nowadays, one of the wonders of modern science. And, of course, we do also have our professional herbal certification classes where you can incorporate herbal medicine into your life for yourself and your family, or work a little more, of course, to become a registered herbalist. And we mentor you through that process with specific requirements and specific homework assignments. You can go as far as that as you'd like, all the way to botanical pharmacology. If you're someone who's interested in chemistry, or if you are a doctor or a pharmacist. So all of those things are available. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com. Today, we're so happy to have on board our guest, because when we're talking about all that modern technology, although there's a lot of positive aspects about it, such as being able to be together with all our listeners and friends from all over the world, We just interviewed a guest from Switzerland in the last hour. So it's just an amazing phenomenon. However, it comes along with problems, because everything is a double-edged sword. And today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Emil de Tafel. He earned his BS degree in engineering chemistry from Stony Brook, where I also teach. And he graduated from there and also got a doctorate in dental surgery from SUNY in Buffalo. And then he decided to apply his engineering and health science background to help the growing population of people concerned about the adverse effects of electromagnetic field radiation, which, of course, is one of the downsides of this technological boom. And Dr. Emil says, in the last generation, man-made electromagnetic field pollution of our environment has escalated to the point where effects on our delicate biological system are a certainty. This has been well documented in the scientific literature, but not well publicized. So we're going to be talking about EMFs today, and look at our link of the archive of this show so you can link right to Dr. Tofel's wonderful website for EMF safety products. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Tofel.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you originally started out your life, I imagine, being pretty interested in things like electromagnetic fields, but perhaps not as worried about the downside.
Well, that's right. Even as a child, I can recall asking my dad how the music got into the radio in the car. And he explained to me how the waves go through the air and jiggle the electrons in the antenna, and that sends a signal down into the radio, and then we get the music out. And even as a kid, as I thought about that, I thought, well, then that must be happening in our bodies as well. Of course, I didn't have the wherewithal to take it much further than that at that point, but it sparked an interest early on. Of course, then in my schooling, college, and afterwards, of course, taking physics courses and electronics courses and so on, I came to understand much in a much deeper way how it all works, and in recent years, how it affects the biology. The current research coming out now is actually identifying the biochemical mechanisms in which the electromagnetic fields are changing what's happening in our cell membranes and causing all sorts of biological effects in our skin, in our heart, in our brains, and just about every organ system you can think of.
Yes.
It goes way back. For me, it goes way back.
Well, I'll tell you, I have to say, I'm thinking back of when I was a child, and I would say I'm just a little bit older than you, having graduated college in 1973, so, you know, kind of right behind you. But when I used to go to malls, when they first made enclosed malls, like before they were just outside malls, you may even remember, you were on Long Island at sunny Stony Brook, so I'm talking about the Roosevelt Field Mall. When I was a little girl, that was just open. And then it suddenly became encased and closed, which was great if you wanted to go hang out and meet boys in the winter. You know, which is what we did, me and my girlfriends as young teenagers. And actually, when I walked into those malls for the very first time, I did not feel well when I was in there. And I actually felt like there was some kind of, I don't know, shaking vibration going on that stopped when I left. And I think that has to do with, you know, the security beams. Or who knows what, inside the malls.
Yeah, well, back in those days, right, back in the 70s, you know, of course it wasn't Wi-Fi and it wasn't cell phones, but
right.
It could have been the fluorescent lights, it could have been security systems, it could have been just the power running under the floor. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities as to what it could have been, but it's interesting that you noticed it the very first time that you went there.
Well, I didn't know it was from something in there. It's just like, something's off. And then I actually stopped going to malls because of that reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I could never make a decision about what to buy because I felt like my brain was kind of scrambled.
Yeah, and now you can hardly go anywhere without experiencing that kind of exposure to electromagnetic fields. We were, I guess 2 years ago now, we were at an autism conference in Chicago, and we had a booth where they were explaining about electromagnetic effects and its relationship to autism. And, of course, wherever I go, I bring my meters, and we were measuring the EMF levels in the lobby of the hotel, and it was just astronomical. It was very difficult to be there. A cohort of mine had a display in which he set up a shielded tent, RF shielded tent, at that as a demonstration. And as it turned out, many of the children who entered the tent, autistic children and their siblings, went in there and felt immediately better. So, you know, they don't really necessarily notice, I don't feel well in this environment, until they move to an environment where the EMF is controlled or lowered, and then all of a sudden they notice that they feel better. And that may be true for the general population as well. We get so accustomed to feeling a sort of a background aggravation from this, whether it's while we're sleeping or while we're working or while we're driving, and we just accept it as normal, these headaches, this irritability, this inability to focus, the inability to sleep well. And we just accept it as part of modern life. And then if we find ourselves in an environment where we're not exposed to that, maybe we go camping or go to the beach or we go elsewhere, and then we find that, I feel so much more relaxed. I feel so much more focused. I feel so much more at ease. And it's striking, the comparison. And we hear this, you know, because of the work we do, we hear this from our customers all day long, that they tell us, I went on vacation or I visited my uncle, and he lives up in the mountains, and boy, it was such a different experience. I can't wait to go back there. And I would like to create that back at home in downtown wherever I live. So your experience early on with the malls has been replicated over and over and over all over the country and all over the world with people who are either outright sensitive and very made very ill by this exposure, or by people who are just enduring it, thinking, it's just part of life, when really it isn't and hasn't been until just very recently. You know, in our millennia of human existence, we haven't dealt with this sort of insult, and now it's here in a big way. Just reading an article this morning on how the 5G is going to be rolling out early next year, and it's just going to add so much more electromagnetic radiation to our personal spaces and to our public spaces, that it's a frightening thing to think about. Completely untested in terms of how it's going to affect the health of people, the health of plants, the health of animals, our bees, our farms, you name it. It's all going to be exposed, and I can't imagine that it's going to be for the better.
That is, you know, right. We can't imagine, but also you have tons of scientific evidence saying we know that. Now, what I did later on is I started to understand what you're saying and really learning more and linking it to my own personal sensitivity to electromagnetic fields, which I must say is nowhere near as bad as most people. I can work in front of a computer all day. Some people can't. But I actually moved to Bisbee, Arizona, because I found that that was a place up in the mountains, and especially when I moved there, which was in the 70s, that there were really no fields. I mean, of course, there were no cell phones. It's just a minute ago. We forget. Another great place, even to this day, is in the mountains outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico, where, by the way, there is no cell phone coverage. And you feel, like you said, when you step out of it, that's when you really, really begin to feel the difference.
Yeah, you know, it's the boiled frog phenomenon. You know, you just turn up the heat a little bit at a time, and before you know it, the water's boiling and the frog is dead. Whereas if you would hit him with hot water all at once, he would have jumped out. And it's the same for our exposure to electromagnetic fields, I feel. That we just and a huge credit to the resilience of our biology that we can tolerate this, or at least that some of us can tolerate it at all. But you know, there comes a tipping point in every person's life from your cumulative exposure, and for some people that comes early or with, you know, a modest amount of exposure, whether it's due to their genetics or their constitution, their level of nutrition, their exposure to heavy metals and pesticides and preservatives and who knows what else. You know, all those factors come into play. It's not just electromagnetic fields. It's, you know, the entire environment that you live in. And some people can endure more and don't get sick as quickly, but will eventually with continued exposure. And then there might be some of us who out there, you know, who smoke a cigar a day and you know, drink a six-pack every day and live to be 96 without any problems, and God bless those
folks. That is true.
They can do it. So, but I mean, you know, if everyone did that, we'd be in a world of hurt. And so it's not an excuse to just go ahead and live an unclean existence.
Now, you mentioned something that perhaps people are interested in, and we want to remind our listeners, we're listening to Dr. Emil Dutafel, and he actually has spent years deeply investigating EMF safety products, and those are those things that can help you ward off the negative effects of electromagnetic fields, and we're going to have a special link on our website, which will take you right to all his information and all the things he's going to be talking about here today. So one thing you mentioned already, Dr. Emil, is a meter. And I want to tell you, when my children were little, and they're now 43 and 40, I actually got a tri-field meter, and I went around the house, and one of the things I did, remember, no cell phones then, much less, but even the TV, I could measure the TV. There were no microwaves, by the way, but I could measure the TV about how far back the children should sit so that they were not inundated with those electromagnetic fields, and then they knew I put tape on the floor, and they were not allowed to sit closer than that tape.
Good for you. You were way ahead of the curve in doing that. You know, that's a legacy left over from the days when you went to buy shoes and they would x-ray your feet to see how well the shoes fit, and very quickly learned that that's not a healthy thing to do. And so there's a whole generation, perhaps your parents or your grandparents' age, who lived through that. And when TVs came along, the cathode ray tubes that were used in the first generations of TVs did emit some x-rays. And so it was well understood, don't sit too close to that TV because of the x-rays. That then through the generation spilled out into because of the electromagnetic fields. And it's still true today. Yes, the cathode ray tube type TVs, the ones with that deep back on them and the computer monitors, did emit a much stronger magnetic field than the LCD or LED type monitors that we have now. But still, the exposure from these things radiates out towards the viewer, whether it's coming from the screen, whether it's coming from the keyboard, the mouse, the tower, or the laptop itself. That radiation is coming at you. And so using a meter is key to diagnosing in your particular environment, because your home, your office, will be different than your neighbor's in terms of where is the wiring, where is the lighting, where is the security system, where is the computer, where's your modem, where's your TV, where's your blender, your toaster, etc., etc. So in any given location in your home, it will be different than someone else's home. In any given location in your home, it will be different from a different location in your home. So comparing sitting in front of the computer in your office area is going to be different than sitting in front of your toaster oven in your kitchen, and also different from sitting on your bed in the bedroom. So having a meter is key. You'd never walk into a pharmacy and tell the pharmacist, you know, I don't feel well, what should I take? You have to start with a diagnosis. I mean, you have to understand what is the problem first. And so having a meter, the tri-field meter, which sadly they no longer make, believe it or not.
No, I did not know that.
Right. It has been replaced. That company has replaced it with a newer updated version called the tri-field meter 2, which is better in some ways. But it's a great meter because it measures the three different types of EMF that you're going to experience, the electric fields, the magnetic fields, and you get these two types from wherever you have electricity, so wiring, appliances, lighting, as well as the radio frequencies, which is all the wireless stuff, you know, cell phones, Wi-Fi, microwave ovens, all that wireless.
Right, and so now, how so you feel that this new generation might not be as good as the old tri-field? I still have my old tri-field, and I still use it. And it's, like I said, about 40 years old. I mean, my kids are babies.
It's a great meter. It's a real workhorse. No, the new generation meter is great. There's no question.
Okay.
And in fact, it has some enhanced sensitivity. It's a little more sensitive in some ways. What I liked about the old one is that it had a needle gauge on it, which reacted very quickly. And so you can almost run down the block with it and see the needle going up and down as you pass by various sources of EMF. The new one now gives you a digital readout, which is fine. You know, you get a number, but you do need to hold it steady for a moment in order to get a reading. So having said all that, having a meter is absolutely essential, because you just have no way to guess how much exposure you have in a given environment. Not only that, which kind of EMF do you have? And not only that, where is it coming from? Is it coming from the light? Is it coming from the air filter? Is it coming from something else? And so being able to diagnose is key and critical in the first step. We've been asked many times to visit someone's home and help them to diagnose their home. And I recall going to one woman's home. She worked from home, so she had a computer set up in the corner and had lots of printers and different computer equipment there, and said she just felt terrible in that corner. And we went, I brought my meters, and I checked it out, and sure enough, there was an enormous magnetic field there. And we hunted around and assumed it was the monitor. We turned the monitor off, it didn't change. We turned the computer off, it didn't change. We turned the printer off, it didn't change. We unplugged the whole thing, it didn't change at all. Come to find out, she had a very small air filtration device there on the floor near where she sat. And that was what was producing all this magnetic field. So we simply took that and moved it two outlets over, so it was still in the same room where she was, now at a distance of something like 7 or 8 feet away. The levels now at the where she sat at the computer, even with the computer on, were completely acceptable, and she felt much better. So taking a moment to diagnose, I mean, you could spend a lot of time and a lot of money addressing the wrong problem if you don't have a proper diagnosis. And the meter will help you to do that. In addition, then once you do something, turn something off, move something further away, shield something, you can use the meter to check and see, okay, so did I accomplish what I set out to, and are there any secondary issues here? You know, we always recommend address the worst thing first, because in any given home, in any given environment, you're going to have multiple sources of electromagnetic fields, right? Lights, wiring, cell phones, adding machines, who knows what. And, you know, to try to address everything all at once can be kind of overwhelming. So you use your meter. You take some measurements in the places where the people normally spend time. In the bed, of course. In the kitchen. In the bathroom. On the couch. In the places where people spend a lot of time. Don't worry so much about how much it is up in the attic or down in the basement. If people don't go there, it doesn't really matter if there are high levels there. So you measure where the people are. If you find a high level, let's make up an example here. I'm measuring in the bedroom, and I find out right where the pillow is on the bed, I have a high magnetic field. So now you take your meter, and you start sweeping around that immediate environment to try to see what is the source here. Is it the clock on the nightstand? Is it the lamp? Is it the electric blanket? Is it the wiring in the wall? And so on, until you identify what it is. It may take a little detective work. You may have to turn something on and off to see if that makes a difference. You may have to unplug some things. You may have to switch some breakers on and off. But in just a couple of minutes, you can very quickly work your way down to, this thing here is the primary source for the high magnetic fields on my pillow. And then you can begin to address it. You can think in terms of the strategies I mentioned a moment ago. Can I increase my distance? Can I move my bed maybe to another part of the room?
Right, and that's a way that you actually can address it by physically changing the environment. Now, how do you feel, not just how you feel, but more information than that, about the new smart meters that most people have on their house and they don't even know it because the electric companies just came and installed them and you don't know it. Everyone I tell to go look outside, they find out it's already there.
Yeah, right. In most areas now, they've been deployed. From our perspective, they're a disaster. There's many different types of smart meters, so we're not talking about one particular animal.
I didn't know that, so yeah. I look forward to learning more from you about that.
Right. And so the issue about the smart meter is, of course, it's measuring your electricity, but then it's sending out a wireless signal, almost like a cell phone signal, that it pulses out back to the utility to report how much usage you have. Some will do it once a day. Some will do it every few minutes. Some will do it every few seconds. And keep in mind that they're doing this 24/7. So you've got this source of radiation mounted to the outside of your home without your knowledge and without your permission that's radiating you with microwaves 24/7. Now, depending on where this is located, maybe it's on the far side of the garage, and of course, distance is your friend here. So the further away from the thing you are, the better, you know, the lower your exposure. But let's say it's mounted right on the outside of your bedroom wall, right where your head might be when you're sleeping. Or worse, maybe you live in an apartment or a townhouse, and all 10 meters are mounted on that wall right outside your room. The cumulative exposure from that coming at you, and by the way, the radiation comes out in all directions, right? It doesn't just go in one direction towards the utility. So your radiation exposure from that can be enormous. Add to it that it comes out in a pulse. It's not a slow, steady burn. It comes out in a very intense pulse. We know this pulse has to be intense because it has to reach back to wherever the utility's receiver is, which may be on a pole on your street. It may be somewhere in your neighborhood. It may be miles away. So that pulse comes out very short duration, but very high intensity. Now, the utility will tell you, it's well within the FCC limits allowable for radiation exposure because it happens, let's say it happens every 6 seconds on the meter that you have. If you take that very strong pulse and you average it over the 6 seconds, right, you have a pulse that lasts a few milliseconds and then you have complete quiet for the rest of the 6 seconds. If you average the intensity of that pulse over 6 seconds, it's not so much. But it's like, which is worse, if I push you down the street with my hands, or I punch you every 6 seconds to move you down the street. it's the same sort of a problem. The intensity of the pulse is what creates the issue here. Add to that now, everyone in your neighborhood's got one of these things on their house. So again, we have a cumulative effect. Just like now, if you turn on your computer to see how many Wi-Fi networks there are in your area, you won't see one or two because you have two neighbors. You're going to see maybe a dozen or two dozen, depending on where you live, Wi-Fi networks whose radiation, whose modem radiation is reaching into your house. And we know they don't need to be that strong because even if you insist on having Wi-Fi, it only needs to serve you while you're in your house. So those we can talk more about that. But the modems are way overpowered, and so are these smart meters. They're way overpowered for the biological effect that they create. And we're just talking about for the people who live in your house. How about for the plants that are in your yard, for the animals that are in your neighborhood, for the bees that are pollinating our food? It's a disaster. It's a growing disaster that that I hope, just like climate change, I hope that we will wake up to and make some sort of a change before it's...
Well, you're doing your best to awaken people, and thank you for that information. We're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We will be right back with more, and we'll be talking about all the work that Dr. Emil Z. Tuffel has done in terms of spreading knowledge about electromagnetic field safety. And we do have a link, and it will be on the archive right here at prn.fm and also at naturalnurse.com/fm, where you can look at all the things he's talking about that can help protect you from this exposure. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the folklore, history, chemistry, and medicinal applications of the common kitchen herb, thyme.
The common culinary spice known botanically as Thymus vulgaris is only one member of a large genera which includes over 400 species and even more varieties. The Thymus genera is originally native to the Mediterranean region and is a perennial plant which grows wild in usually dry, sandy soil, green heaths, and grasslands. Thyme is a prolific, fragrant, creeping ground cover and often displays an attractive spray of flowering branchlets spanning the spectrum from white to violet.
There is considerable debate amongst historians as to the origin of the name thyme. Some believe it to be from the Greek thymen, meaning to fumigate or to burn a sacrifice, because it was used as a sweet-smelling incense and also to keep pests and venomous creatures away from the Greek home. Others believe it came from the Greek thumos, meaning courage or energy, perhaps because it has a reputation of being used by Greek warriors for courage and was bathed in and used as a beverage for invigoration. The Egyptians used an herb called tham, which we believe is Thymus vulgaris, to mummify their dead. The principal chemical constituents of thyme are the volatile oils consisting of phenol, thymol, and carvacrol. A 1977 article in the scientific journal Chemical Abstracts revealed that thymol's antimicrobial activity is 18 times more powerful than phenol. Phenol is a major antiseptic used in commercial germicidal cleaners like Lysol. Thymol is one of the most potent antimicrobial substances known and far surpasses even the strongest antibiotics. It has been illustrated in the Journal of Chemistry and in the Merck Index of Drugs and Chemicals to destroy parasites, worms, fungi, bacteria, mosquito larvae, and many viruses.
The pharmaceutical and cosmetic industry is privy to the important medicinal effects of oil of Thymus vulgaris. It is ubiquitously found in gargles, cough drops, vapor rubs, and many mouthwashes. Oil of thyme is to be used, albeit very sparingly because of its potency, as a gargle or mouthwash for sore throats and inflamed gums. Because the volatile oil is expelled via the lungs and kidneys, naturopathic physicians use it for upper respiratory infections and urinary tract infections. If you're in the midst of a cold and are lying in bed with too much thyme on your hands, try making a thyme tea made with just a few teaspoons of thyme to a cup of boiling water. It's an excellent diaphoretic because it causes the body to perspire profusely. Thyme also possesses an excellent carminative and antispasmodic effect, helping in poor digestion, flatulence, and intestinal gripe.
So, listeners, if you're feeling ill, thyme heals all wounds. Remember to reach for that thyme in a bottle the next time you open up the natural medicine chest.
I'm the natural nurse and Dr. Z, and perhaps you have noticed that we have been having a few shows about this very important topic, which has to do with the extreme health interference with our own health and wellness of electromagnetic fields, which, as our guest is discussing, and our guest is Dr. Emil Toffel, and he's very, very well versed on EMF safety products and how you can help shield yourself. And we're talking about the dangers. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Emil.
Great. It's my pleasure.
Now, so you've been into this quite a while. Did you get involved in this? You explained, you know, you thought something about it when you were a child, but to be so involved in deeply researching a lot of these safety products and making them available through the link that will be on our archive, what got you all the way there?
Well, personal interest and concern about the health effects of electromagnetic fields. In 1996, I had some time on my hands and was looking around for something to do, and thought I would investigate the health effects of electromagnetic fields. And at that time, there was some information, but not a lot. And there were some meters available, but not a lot. And there was definitely a lack of ways to shield or protect yourself. So I decided to make that sort of thing available to the general public. And so I set out about to do that. Started the company by myself in 1996 with just a handful of products and learned on the job, if you want to say it that way, about how to use EMF meters, how to do shielding, how to create shielding products, and how to make them available to people. And so for the last 22 years, we've been expanding on that theme. Our total focus is on electromagnetic field safety. We don't do anything else. And so we have a very narrow focus on what we do. We try to think of ourselves as, if you have an EMF issue, we have an EMF solution for you. It was interesting to me that you described how when your children were young, you used distance and you actually taped off a perimeter around the TV using distance to keep the children away from the TV and lower their radiation exposure. And I think that is, in general, it's a very effective strategy. Obviously, it's very cost-effective. It just means that you need to know that you have a source of radiation, or you need to have a meter so that you can measure, like you did with your tri-field meter, and say, this is the distance we need to stay away from the TV. And back in those days, that may have been enough in your home. Nowadays, it's certainly not. As we mentioned before, you're going to have certainly wiring in the walls, lighting, motors, wireless equipment, and so on. So to know where the hot spots are in your home, to identify them, to identify where the safe zones are, if you want to call it that. Anyone who's got a microwave oven in their kitchen or in their home, anywhere in their home, and help you if you've got one in your dorm room, because you really can't use distance to escape it when you're that close to it.
That's right. Or like you also said, you know, you also talked about the fact that if people live in a group setting, like co-ops or condos, I mean, what do you do? I have seen people do the following. You know, they were ill. We investigated this as one of the reasons, because very often people find out that they have these problems because they don't feel well, but they're told everything is fine.
I've heard that as well, over and over and over. The doctors do every kind of test, and they say, you're fine. Take a sedative, right? And so they start to think of it as a psychiatric issue. Then in desperation, the poor person who's not feeling well will turn to their family for help, who will suggest a psychiatric diagnosis. And then on their own, left in isolation without help, they'll research it themselves and hope that they find good information. You know, the Internet is great for information, but there's both good and bad information there. You can get a lot of misinformation. But hopefully they'll stumble upon some good information and get themselves a meter so they can start measuring and get to the bottom of what's going on. Now, I'm not saying that EMF is the cause of everybody's illness, but because it's so pervasive and because it does affect so many people, it's one of the things to consider. Yes, consider your diet and your overall health and nutrition and exercise and everything else, of course. But consider that EMF exposure levels at home, at work, in your car may be contributing as well. So get a meter. Diagnose. Make some measurements. If necessary, get together with a neighbor or a relative and chip in. You can share a meter. And you're going to need either a meter that has multiple functions, like the one that Dr. Ellen described before, the tri-field meter, which measures the three different types of EMF, or you can get individual meters that will measure the electric field, the magnetic field, and the radio waves. In addition, there's one other type of EMF that most people will want to check for, and that's called dirty electricity. Dirty electricity is high-frequency radiation that gets onto the wiring of the home. It comes from the things that we plug in, such as plasma TVs, dimmer switches, fluorescent lights. All these things inject high-frequency signals back into the wiring, which then transfers throughout the house, and it comes into the house from the street because of all the things your neighbors have plugged in, and it comes into your house from the lovely smart meter that's mounted on the outside that also is injecting dirty electricity. The reason why this is important, just like before when we were talking about the intense pulses that the smart meter produces, dirty electricity comes in at a higher frequency than the normal electricity does. And it's a mixture of frequencies, and these are more biologically active even than the normal 60 hertz electricity that you might find on the wiring. So checking for that is simple to do. There's a meter. You simply plug it in to the outlets. You go around your house, and you check each of the outlets, and you get a number on the meter. You'd like that number to be below 50, but very often it's rare to find a home that's below 50 anymore. You'll find numbers in the hundreds or even in the thousands. It was maybe 10 years ago now, we moved into a house here in downtown, and we bought the house, and of course I checked it, and we found levels of 1,700 or so in that house on the dirty electricity meter. And so we went about taking action to remediate that. But I bring that up just as a point to make that you would have no idea, and you would live there for the duration of however you live there, exposed, bathed in this radiation, and maybe made quite ill by it and have no idea where it was coming from. So the importance of the meter. So once you have a meter and you've diagnosed, I've got high levels of this kind of radiation, and I've determined that it's coming from this or these sources, now we can begin to think about, all right, so what can we do about it? Now, I hinted at this before. There's three strategies to think about. One is to increase your distance. So as you did with your children in the TV, you made them sit back from the TV. So you can move the people away from the source, or you can move the source away from the people. So examples of that are, you have your bed up by the wall. There's a smart meter on the other side of the wall. Maybe it makes sense to move the bed to the other side of the room, or maybe it makes sense to use a different bedroom. That's moving, an example of moving the people. Another example might be, you have an electric alarm clock on the nightstand next to your bed. producing a strong magnetic field. Simple solution there, take that alarm clock, move it over across the room, and set it on the dresser. Now you've got 8 or 10 feet of distance between you, and it's no longer an exposure issue at the bed area. So distance can be your friend. It usually has little or no cost involved and is very effective because the radiation intensity, just like the heat from a candle, decreases with distance. The closer you get to that candle, the hotter it gets. In the same way with electromagnetic fields, the closer you get to the source, the more intense the radiation gets. So distance, whenever you can, use distance. The second approach is to disable, disactivate, or turn off a source of radiation. So what are some common examples of that? You might have a Wi-Fi modem in your house, and you might need it. I find that hard to believe, but you might need it. You might consider putting it on a timer so that it turns off at night when nobody's using it. So at least during the sleeping hours, you're not exposed to that radiation. The reason that's important is because the modem is pumping out this Wi-Fi radiation 24/7, whether you use it or not. So put the thing on a timer. It turns it off at night or maybe at other times when the people are likely to be near that area and not using the Wi-Fi. And so you can easily turn it off. If you have a microwave oven, you might consider getting rid of it, permanently turning it off and putting it out to the curb. The emissions from a microwave oven are horrendous in terms of the microwaves that leak out of the thing and in terms of the magnetic fields that it emits. If you insist on having one, please do not let your children stand there and watch the popcorn popping through the window. The radiation intensity up close to the thing is enormous. Make it a rule, like you did with your TV. Here's the safe perimeter. It's probably 8 to 10 feet away for an average microwave oven. But while that thing is on, nobody goes within that perimeter. But my recommendation would be to get rid of such a thing. As well with the modem, run wires, run Cat5 wires, and turn off the Wi-Fi. The Cat5 wires are faster. They're more secure in terms of people accessing your data. And, of course, it means you'll have no radiation. By the way, when you're using Wi-Fi, not only is the modem radiating, but your computer is radiating. And so if you're working with a laptop, the antenna, the Wi-Fi antenna is usually somewhere near the top of the screen. So even if your Wi-Fi router is across the room or maybe on the other side of the house, you're still sitting right next to a source of Wi-Fi radiation, your laptop itself. And so you have to keep in mind, I can convert this to zero radiation by running a cable and turning off the Wi-Fi. For the cost of running the cable, you've increased your speed, your security, and reduced your radiation by 100%.
Don't the companies that, don't they come in and do, I have mine all with a plug. It goes right in my computer. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about, yes.
Yeah, so plug. They come but, in and do
but,
that.
But, and that's great if they will. But use your meter then to check because your computer's Wi-Fi may still be on. In fact, will still be on until you turn it off. And the same with your modem. So just because you're using a wire doesn't mean the Wi-Fi is turned off. So okay. Use your meter and make sure to turn it off.
Yeah, because I think it used to be like that years ago. And now the Wi-Fi is just everywhere because you can pick up, the Infinity in this particular area of the country or Comcast when I'm in Florida. You can pick that up anywhere, just in the air and at the bus stop and everywhere you are.
Yeah, sure. From everybody's modem, right? Everybody in your neighborhood and the businesses and the homes.
And then they also create hotspots.
Create hotspots on the telephone poles and in the subway and in elevators and in the trains, in the airplanes where you're captive for however many hours you're there. So, yes. So, using a meter, you can determine your exposure and you can determine where it's coming from. Just bear in mind that the modem is an awful source of Wi-Fi microwave radiation. Turning it off and running a cable is a great idea, but check it because even many of these devices, when you turn off the Wi-Fi, they still leak or bleed microwave radiation just because of the circuitry in them. They're not intentionally communicating any longer. They're not putting out a electronically useful signal, but they're just bleeding the radiation out into their environment. And so turning it off, unplugging it, running cables instead, and so on, is definitely a useful strategy. But when all else fails, then you can defend or you can shield. So in the case of this modem who's still bleeding out radiation, you can wrap it in a shielding fabric. We usually will use a mesh fabric in that case because those things do tend to heat up and you don't want to overheat it. You can wrap it in the fabric, and that will shield that radiation and keep it inside there so it's not bleeding out into your environment.
Well, we're going to talk more about these interesting ways that we can protect ourselves, and we are talking today with Dr. Emil de Tafel, who obviously is an expert on how to protect ourselves and increase our EMF safety, and he's assembled a wonderful variety of electromagnetic field deflections and safety devices and products, which you can find by going to the link on this show's archive, which will be up shortly. It'll say, for more information, visit this link. You can click on it, and you will go right to his website. And Dr. Emil, we will be right back with more. We're going to take a break. So our wonderful sponsor, Progressive Radio Network, can tell everyone about more about our radio station. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and the industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we are here with our guest today, Dr. Emil de Tafel, and his wonderful site that really tells us and offers excellent EMF safety products. and you can find the link on our archive. Now, Dr. Emile, I have a question for you. When I'm looking around on your site, and many of my patients and viewers and listeners really are looking for these kinds of safety products, there's so many choices, it's almost hard to narrow it down. But one thing I'm wondering is, what do you offer in terms of cell phones? Because I know sometimes there are things that you put on the cell phone that they say rebalances the waves or something like that. What do you recommend? Because I know you don't have a cell phone. That's how committed you are to this personally. But certainly many people do.
Yeah, that's correct. I don't have a cell phone. I don't use a cell phone because it's, in my opinion, it's just not worth the health risk of doing so. But if you insist on having one and using one, you're going to use the three strategies that we've already talked about. You're going to use distance. You're going to use, meaning you'll use a speakerphone, when to keep the phone away from your body, or you're going to use a headset, in particular an air tube headset. So the air tube headsets conduct the sound up to your ear through an air tube so that there's no wire, no speaker, no magnet, no electronics at all up by your head. And at the same time, keeping the phone at a distance so that the radiation from the phone itself is diminished when it reaches your body. So distance, then to deactivate or to use it as little as possible, to turn it off when it's not in use, or at the very least, put it into airplane mode when you're doing things on the phone that don't require a connection. And third, shielding. So there's a variety of shields you can put either on the phone or that you can put on your body.
What about those various shields? Which type do you think are perhaps better than others, or have they been tested?
Yes. So there's fundamentally two types. And which one you use depends on which model of phone you have. So the two fundamental types are things that have a shield or barrier built into them, like a case, or a holster, or a shield that you can add to an existing case or holster, or even a shield that you can put into a pocket. That's the one category, an actual shield. The other category is a type of sticker, button, or some sort of bug that you can peel and stick onto your phone. Now, we've tested both types, and we have found that shields that are made of legitimate shielding material that are at least as big as the entire phone can have a very good shielding effect. The kind that stick on and are supposed to somehow harmonize or neutralize or make the EMF less harmful, we don't recommend for those, for the simple reason that the ones that we've tested, and we've tested a lot of them, we cannot measure any change whatsoever when you measure the radiation intensity with a meter. Now, whether or not they're doing something to your biology to, in fact, make the radiation from your cell phone less harmful, I couldn't say because we're not testing people's biology here. But from my way of thinking, if the radiation's still there, the radiation's still there. So we don't recommend those. It's unfortunate because they're cheap, they're simple, one size fits all, you stick it on the phone, and you're done. The real danger with them, I feel, is that people who will use them, put them on their phone, feel like they're protected in some way, and then may use their phone with impunity. In other words, they'll use their phone more than they would have if they didn't have so-called protection. And the result is that they actually radiate themselves more, not less.
Well, that's interesting perspective. Now, I know that it is true that all the manufacturers who have that stick-on variety that you're discussing do say it will not change the measurement. Like if you look at it with these meters, which you certainly should have a meter, and they make that very clear, but what they state is that they, as you stated, somehow harmonize the field so it's not as dangerous. But you're saying that's really not well substantiated.
Well, in my experience, it's not substantiated at all, because if it was doing that, you would have some measurable effect, repeatable measurable effect that you could demonstrate. Now, what I've seen them use as a demonstration is heat maps of the face or blood coagulation, and these are exquisitely subjective ways to measure some sort of an effect. If you've ever done thermographic images of a person's face, you'll notice that it changes and it's easy to manipulate. The same thing with the rouleau formation, the red blood cell clumping. You can take a blood sample and put it on a slide, and you can look over that sample. When you look at a drop of blood under a slide, it looks like you're looking at a mile of area, right? Acres and acres of farmland, if you will, from an airplane. And so you can find sections in there where there's very little blood at all, sections where it's all piled up, sections where it's not clumped, sections where it is clumped. And so you can very subjectively manipulate the result to say, oh, look, this one has clumping and this one doesn't, when in reality they both do and they both don't. It just depends on which part of the slide you're looking at.
Right, so you say the best thing is sort of these, they're like a little cover that you slip the phone right in.
Exactly right. So they may come in the form of a pouch, right, a fabric pouch or a vinyl pouch or a leather pouch that you put the phone in. It might come in the form of sort of a book-style cover that, you know, you snap the phone into and then the front of the book opens to reveal the phone. They might come in the form of a holster or even come in the form of an insert that you could put into an existing case or pocket that, you know, you like to carry your phone in. And so you just add the shielded lining to it. Now, when you're shielding a cell phone, there's two things to keep in mind. Number one is if you want the cell phone to work, you can't reduce all the radiation, right? If you kill the radiation, then the phone doesn't work anymore. You might as well just turn it off. But you can shield one side, and the phone still works just fine. And we know this because an unshielded phone, when placed up against a person's head, is totally shielded on one side. Your head is a very effective shield to an unshielded phone. It completely blocks the radiation on that one side. I don't recommend it as a strategy, but I make a point here that a phone shielded on one side and with your hand kind of covering some of the back side of the phone still works just fine. So when you shield the phone, you only want to shield one side, and you want to shield that whatever side is facing towards your body, right? So whether the shield is on the phone or on your body or in a purse or in a pocket or a wallet or whatever it is, make sure that shield is between you and the phone. That's number one. Number two, so many phones now have touchscreens. And as yet, there's no effective way to shield the touchscreen with a transparent shield that will still allow you to use the touchscreen.
You know, I just want to tell you, Doctor, that we are getting, like, right close to the end here. So although there's so much information more to share, we're going to have to end here. But I do want to remind our listeners who they are speaking about, and that is you. And that is Dr. Emil Dettafel. And as you can tell, he's an engineering chemistry major and also a professional dentist. And he has studied this in depth out of this information. Go ahead to our archive. You'll find a link to EMF safety products. And thank you so much for being our guest today.
My pleasure.
Thank you, listeners. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, hoping that you stay healthy.